You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. And we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney. Now, back in November 2021, myself and our North America correspondent, Ronan Seagrave, in Winnipeg in Canada, well, we're both from Pirate Radio in Ireland back in the 80s, and we decided to have an anorak session. What is an anorak? Anoraks are people who, you know, it comes from the pirate radio stations of the 1960s that were on ships, Radio Veronica and also Radio Caroline. They're on ships, and these people who were fans would have to go out of the ships. It's pouring rain and they always wore anoraks, and they were just obsessed with pirate radio and all the DJs. Anyway, myself and Ronan both come from Irish pirate radio, and we decided to have a chat about anoraks. Take a listen.
Ronan, I want to ask you, I'm going to have a bit of an anorak session, if that's okay with you.
No problem.
On social media, I put up a song called The Jam Song. Oh, by the way, just explain what an anorak is to our listeners.
An anorak is someone who's very much into radio. And in an Irish context, it would be somebody who's very much into pirate radio. And the golden era of that in the late 1970s to the late 1980s. And it's somebody who, you know, takes a great interest in that particular era of Irish history. From a UK perspective, it would be people very heavily into sort of the offshore pirates that existed in the 60s and 70s, yeah. Like Radio Caroline. In Ireland, it very much revolves around that era of pirate radio, as I say, from the late 70s to the late 80s when the law changed.
I was a bit confused about what anorak means, because I actually thought it was the presenters. And the word anorak, I think, may come from the fact that these fans of presenters on the likes of Radio Caroline, which was on a ship, would have to wear anoraks in the cold.
That is absolutely, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, broadcasting on ships in the ocean, I mean,
yes.
What were they thinking? But, you know, Ronan O'Reilly, an Irishman who you know, brought Radio Caroline on to air, but that's exactly how it came about. There used to be a show that drifted on from various stations over the years, but it used to be on Midlands Radio, the pirate station, up into the late 80s, and then sort of drifted on to various other, you know, small-scale pirates that still existed after the law changed, and then online stations. It used to be called the Anorak Hour, and it would.
I was on that show.
You were probably on it.
Yeah. I was on it. I used to do interviews every week.
Jerry used to do that show, and it was memorable actually for quite spectacular rows that would occasionally hurt. I mean, occasionally they would say things about stations, and you'd have owners ringing up saying that furiously is not true. I mean, there was a famous episode that revolved around Hugh Hardy closing down the Radio Carousel network in 1988. He decided to focus on a Dublin station that he'd founded called Classic. I used to work for Hugh Hardy, and I knew all about his temper.
Is he up there with Chris Carey, who owned Radio Nova?
Well, in fairness, at least Chris paid people. Getting
yes,
money
this
out
is true.
could be hit and miss, to be perfectly honest. I mean, he had a nice side, but Hugh, anyway, you know, exploded one week in anger, saying there was outrageous things being said about his business interests, and even got down to anal stuff like sales of transmitter equipment.
God.
But it was a show every week that sort of told you what was going on in sort of the pirate radio scene and you know, various comings and goings.
And that station actually lost its license, didn't it? JRO.
That was another.
He had an interim. It's like a short.
No, he was involved, I think, in Phantom.
That's it, Phantom FM. Yeah.
Phantom FM was probably the most famous pirates that emerged. I mean, for viewers' interest, the law changed in 1988 in Ireland, where the previous legislation was from 1926, so the maximum fine for illegal broadcasting was £50, and it wasn't illegal to advertise. It was really no deterrent.
Yes.
But the 1988, suddenly very large fines came in. It was illegal to advertise. It was illegal for utilities to provide services to illegal broadcasters. It essentially ended, you know, pirate radio as a viable commercial business in Ireland. But smaller stations started popping up, particularly in Dublin, and they were really catering, Henry, for markets that the new licensed commercial stations that were coming on stream weren't catering for. So Phantom was playing like a lot of alternative rock.
Very
music.
Alternative, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which wasn't being played by any of the licensed stations. But anyway, Phantom kind of was lobbying, you know, the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, and was actually granted a license. And sadly, it just didn't work, Henry. And whether, you know, there were all sorts of explanations, but they just weren't sort of business savvy enough for commercial. It was a very competitive market in Dublin. There was an attempt to rescue it. It rebranded, I think, to something called TX for a while, but it was largely automated. Yeah. But it went off the air. TX itself eventually ended up going off the air. Now, the various people who were involved in Phantom are involved in another entity called 8 Radio, which was granted, I think in the last month or so, Henry, a sort of a temporary interim license to see how that goes. And we'll see whether the BAI want to grant them a license. But they'll be a bit wary, Henry, because of what happened the last time and Phantom not working, which was a pity. I think there is a market for a station like that.
It's also a pity the way radio has gone. Isn't that fair to say? I mean, as they say, men in suits are running these radio stations. It's all about money. And I believe in Ireland, you've got to have a certain amount of talk time.
Yes, I mean, that's funny. It just really hasn't changed since 1989. It's high time that it did. I mean, the requirements on independent stations have 20% sort of news and talk. So a lot of them have slightly extended news bulletins or one-hour sort of, or two-hour sort of talk shows and phone-ins. I mean, Irish radio is just awash with phone-ins.
Still.
A couple of stations, our old friend Kevin Branigan, because Radio Nova is seen as a more specialist station, Kevin managed to get it down to 10%, and good on him. I mean, I think that's just outdated regulation. I think Irish radio could do with being deregulated. I think radio in Ireland and commercial radio is similar indeed to Canada. It's dominated by large global companies, actually, at this stage. You have News who are global, who are an offshoot of News International, Rupert Murdoch. They own many stations. And then most recently, Communicorp, which used to be owned by Dennis O'Brien, a kind of a mobile phone magnet in Ireland, a somewhat controversial figure.
Indeed.
He sold Communicorp to Bauer, which again is a big European broadcasting giant with stations in the UK in particular, and stations in all over Europe. And you know, so it's not you know, radio pioneers or even people like Chris Carey, individuals owning stations. They're owned by really very large global businesses.
Do you, Ronan? If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Canada. It's interesting that, you know, back in the day, as you know, I worked for Radio Nova and Q102, and there was another station called Sunshine Radio. They're the three big players. And don't you find it a bit curious that once legal radio began in Ireland in the late 80s, that suddenly there's another Radio Nova, another Q102, and another Sunshine? It's I find that really curious.
It is curious. I mean, I think that there's a reason for that. And also, actually, some of the same presenters are still there.
Yes.
I think there's a reason for that. I mean, I think with Radio Nova, that was a genuine tribute by our friend Kevin Branigan. To be clear, Kevin is actually, in fair play to him, is running the only major stations in Ireland now in Irish ownership. That's Radio Nova, Sunshine 106, and Classic Hits, which has a license in various cities in Ireland.
And that used to be called 4FM?
Used to be called 4FM, now called Classic Hits. But yeah, I think the use of sort of Nova, Sunshine, Q-Unit, Radio Nova, as I said, was a genuine, heartfelt tribute by Kevin, who adored Radio Nova in the 80s.
And of course, Kevin Branigan is the CEO of the new Radio Nova.
Indeed.
And we met when I was in my 20s working on the original Radio Nova, which had really turned into Energy 103, but it was really Radio Nova. And he was like a teenager and a total anorak. And he came in and he said, "Can I press the cart button?" And I said, "Yeah, but you can't do it on air." And he took a photo of me. And little did I know he'd be running Radio Nova. And I'm really pleased because he is passionate, isn't he?
He's totally passionate, and I actually quite like the station. I listen to it in Canada. I mean, it plays sort of guitar-based, a lot of classic rock music I quite like, you know, just really, really good music. And, you know, I think it's a fitting tribute to Chris Kett. And I don't have any issue, to be honest, with legal stations using
names,
those
yeah.
call signs. I think it's good that they're still going and they're still being used. Mm. Others might have different opinions, but I don't have any issue with that.
Neither do I. When I visited Dublin the last time, which is quite a long time ago, Kevin threatened me to read the news on air live. And I said, on the new Radio Nova, given that I was a newsreader on the original Radio Nova, and I said, that ain't going to happen. I'm not doing that. I want to mention the Jam song, because, you know, as you know, I'm putting my book up on social media, a
fantastic
chapter each week.
It's great reading.
And a lot of it is about radio. And I was mentioning Radio Nova in the last chapter that I put up. And our correspondent, Thomas Booker, in Texas, Googled Nova and came up with the new Radio Nova.
Yeah, the current license station.
And you corrected him on this, didn't you?
I did. I mean, we were talking about Radio Nova, the super pirate in Ireland, which broadcast between 1981 and 1986, and as you say, then really sort of rebranded. But what made Radio Nova totally unique in a lot of respects, one was Chris Carey, the owner, and bringing all these ideas of West Coast radio. And I was 12 years old, Henry, when that station launched, and suddenly there was this incredibly strong FM stereo signal on 88 FM.
Yeah, and it was
playing
clean.
Brilliant music, and music that was designed to sound good in FM stereo. And Chris decided to really, as another feature, to give the station a completely professional feel. He bought a set of Jam jingles from Dallas, and Jam are the most well-known jingle company in the world, and they've done thousands of radio stations,
the
US.
They did jingles for the BBC. I mean, that says
it all.
The
BBC,
the
BBC. You know, stations that Chris had listened to a lot in Los Angeles had jingle packages, K-Earth 101 and Kiss FM.
Yes,
and he brought that amazing kind of West Coast American feel to the station, but these really, really slick jingles. I mean, you have to, people listening to this have to remember there were no jingles like that on any other station in Ireland.
No.
They were quite
and the ones on the National Broadcaster Radio 2
were horrible.
Just awful jingles.
They were homemade, kind of, you know. And other stations had other packages, but nothing sounded as slick and professional. So Chris knew exactly what he was doing.
Yes.
And even when the station over time sort of changed frequencies, he'd just get a set of jingles cut with the new frequencies, and it still sounded incredibly slick and professional, and it added to the Nova sound.
I want to talk about the Jam song, because Jam, as you've just mentioned, the biggest jingle maker in the world, decided to put all the jingles together and make a song out of it. And they sent these to the stations. And this song of jingles, which we're going to play in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
This was like a present to their clients.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But they started, a lot of the stations
played
this jingle.
Including Radio Nova. Yeah.
Including Radio Nova.
They were mentioned on it. They were mentioned on it. And it was, the song was great. I mean, you know, great lines in, like, Every City's Got a Kiss. And I don't know how many station jingles around, it must be hundreds, that they just fire off.
Yes.
And they show their kind of global appeal by you know, playing, including the jingles they cut for the BBC. But yeah, in that time of the late 80s into the early 90s, they were absolutely king. I mean, there are other competitors now, companies like Wise Buddha and others who have come into the market, but they were the absolute kings of the jingle market. You wanted the station to sound good, you bought jingles from Jam.
Okay, and let's listen to the Jam song right now.
Such a maze of W's and K's, and every city's got a kiss. We're the hot rockin' flame, throwing all hit voices that you hear most everywhere. We're the calling games and the DJ names, the excitement on the air. We're counting them up and counting them down on the shows that count the most.
Rick D, Scott Shannon, Dan Ingram.
Continuous country, KYGO.
We're WMAL
and WMGK.
The sound of jam is everywhere you go.
Everywhere you go.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tune.
Henry O'Donovan!
Okay, very ingenious stuff. Do you think it's a bit sad that singing jingles are kind of out? Oh, here on Bondi Tunes International, we have singing jingles. but they're kind of out of vogue now, aren't they?
They are, sadly. I mean, one of the stations that, and I think even that they've started to phase it out, was still using them well into the 2000s, was KRT 101 in Los Angeles. They were still having the singing jingles from Jam and the big top of the hour stuff. Yeah, I do miss them. Radio has sort of shifted more to liners, you know, people, you know, speaking in various sort of mid-Atlantic accents, names of stations and sound bites from slogans from stations, that kind of thing. But why is Buddha and companies like that do what's probably now known as imaging, which can be a sort of almost computer-driven sound of a jingle of a station, but often mixing in like current chart hits and that kind of thing. So it has changed. But yeah, I'm like you. I'm just very nostalgic for those Jam jingles. Yeah. They take me straight back to my teenage years.
Are they still going, Jam?
Jam are still going. I mean, they've sort of.
They'd be on oldies stations now, wouldn't they?
There's a lot of oldies. There isn't a lot of country stations as well who don't particularly want to sound terribly trendy, if you know what I mean. Mm. So they use a lot of oldies stations. They have sort of modernised things a bit in terms of trying to compete with the likes of Wise Buddha and other imaging companies. Mm. But they're still going. And yeah, you will still hear them. You'll hear them in some stations still in North America. You'll hear them still in some stations in Canada.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with our North America correspondent, Ronan Seagrave, in Winnipeg in Canada, and we're having what we call an anorak session. Do you know Dublin has 17 stations? Did you know that?
More than that? I did. I mean, I don't know how many there
are. It's only got a population of, what, a million?
A million and a half. I mean, Winnipeg would be, you know, if you take the total catchment area of all in an FM, they're allowed to go up to 5 kilowatts, so probably about 800,000. I mean, there's somewhere between 25 to 30 stations, Henry, and that's also including sort of the national broadcaster CBC and its stations. Mm. We have a lot of talk radio. In terms of talk stations, people just stations dedicated to people talking about sport 24/7. So it is a very, very crowded FM dial here. The other thing with Canada as well, Henry, is aside from one thing, which is called needle time,
yes,
it's completely deregulated. So you will not hear on any music station in Canada any news whatsoever. I mean, they might give like 15 seconds in the breakfast show to talk about one or two news. But that'll be it. There are no news buttons. It's all
free
music.
Free radio.
All music, yeah. And the only requirement that they have, and this relates to specific hours of the day between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., and it's a bit less at night, is that 33% of the content on music stations must be Canadian. Now, most music stations in Canada, Henry, are eternally grateful for, you know, Justin Bieber, Drake, The Weeknd.
We need to mention that Justin Bieber is indeed Canadian.
The Weeknd, Drake...
Oh yeah,
Brian Adams. Lots of so you hear it. You do hear a lot of that, and
the popular ones.
The popular ones. I mean, the Bare Naked Ladies is another one another band that's played a lot. Tragically Hip, which was probably Canada's greatest rock band. So that's the one requirement that they have is needle time for Canadian music, and as it's all programmed, Henry. By computers, they can ensure that they absolutely meet that requirement.
Yes, of course. And listening devices. It's like if you swear on radio, which we try not to, it's not a human listening to that swear word. It's actually a computer listening. And if you say, like, a bad word, it picks it up and your station can go down because of it. You know,
you can. I mean, there's a notorious DJ in Winnipeg called Mark Wheeler, who worked for actually the classic rock station that just changed format. But he worked for that a few years ago, and he ended up being sort of totally outrageous on air. I mean, it got into him. He discovered he was sort of making rap records in the side that was sort of seen as misogynistic, and was saying sort of various outrageous things on air, and they fired him. And he was off radio for about a year, and one of the other music stations there, you know, they were dropping in the ratings, and they decided, well, how do we get back up the ratings? I know, we'll hire Mark Wheeler. And they got, and what made it sort of worse was the sort of female presenter who was doing breakfast with someone else, she was fired. Now, she was eventually picked up by another station here. But the station took a chance, and they hired Wheeler, and it worked. But he hit the headlines again during the week where the new premier of Manitoba, she decided to do her first radio interview with Mark Wheeler, which sort of raised some eyebrows. This was seen as perhaps slightly risky, but she was trying to, I think it was a genuine attempt to sort of get to a youth audience, if you know what I mean. It's very much a hot hit driven type station. So, the market here is ferociously competitive. As I say, there are no... restrictions in terms of, there's no talk at all really in music radio. I mean, DJs occasionally doing air checks, that's it.
I want to mention, I've got a show called Bondi Tunes Plus, which is music from the 40s to the 90s.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And this is separate to this chat show that we're talking on. And I do that every week. And a lot of people, you know, in the we're on about 11 stations at the moment around the world. And a lot of people are going, oh, you know, you're trying to hit about six different demographics in terms of age groups. And I've had that for 9 years now, that particular show. And they keep taking the show, despite the fact, you know, Ronan, that there's always this, especially, you know, the people running these big commercial stations are afraid that if you play a song from the 1940s and then play a song from the 1990s, they see that as really bad. They think that we're going to lose.
Confusing people. Yes, confusing people.
But it works. Yeah, I mean, I spoke with RTI, which is in Slovakia, one of our broadcast carriers, and he said, it's brilliant. Just keep doing it. And so it just disproves this theory that, you know, I mean, we don't depend on advertising, of course, but it does kind of disprove the theory that you're going to isolate somebody all the time with different...
Yeah, and I think that's a fair comment, Henry. I think, you know, a lot of the songs that are played on radio, you know, you tend to hear them quite frequently, you know, the same type of songs. I mean, people joke about, you know, just 300 songs that some of these stations are using, and that may well be true. And it can get very repetitive, which is a bit like why I like Kevin Brannigan's station in Ireland, because it's not like that. But I think the reason for that is radio consultants and others would say that the key person you're trying to get is, you're trying to get housewives, you're trying to get young professionals, you're trying to get a certain sort of demographic of people.
Well, spending demographic, young people who don't have mortgages yet and all that sort of stuff.
They're the people they're trying to get. And that means it's probably led to a culture of playing it safe, if you know what I mean. That, you know, these are not people who are going to want to wake up at 8 in the morning and find sort of AC/DC blaring at them, you know what I mean? So I think they do play it safe in terms of... And there's also a school of thought that people want to be sort of cheered up by radio. Do you know what I mean? Particularly during the daytime. Now, there is a market for, you know, serious radio playing serious. You know, there is a market for that, and I'm not saying there isn't. But I don't think people... When do people most listen to radio, Henry? What is breakfast?
And the drive time.
Yeah, breakfast in Canada, music stations, it's the two-hander. It's usually a man and a woman.
Yes, often comedians on these stations.
Yes, one... on Virgin Radio is quite good. It has a comedian and even most and a lady called Chrissy Troy, who's kind of a well-known media personality. She's on and a very nice story. One guy worked in the station as an intern, and they discovered actually he was really quite good, and he went on air as part of the breakfast show, but they still call him Kevin the intern. The two comedians, a two-hander, sometimes 300, that's the only time you really hear people talking on music radio in Canada. And the school of thought, and that and Drive, is the school of thought is people want to be cheered up. They want to be cheered up going to work, want to laugh. Music's not too heavy, you know, it's old favorite, it's, you know, favorites or current music or whatever. And similarly on Drive. And that's what people want to hear. And then, you know, if people have got the radio blaring in the shop, you want to keep it pretty safe too, because again, people, you know, walking into a shop are not going to want to hear Judas Priest blaring out or something like that.
You know, Ronan, my stepmother owned a shop in the 80s in the centre of Dublin in a place called the ILAC Centre, which you would be familiar with.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And she was playing a radio station. Actually, she was playing Radio Nova. And this guy came in and said, are you paying for this music? She said, feck off. Now, feck is not a bad word, okay? It's an Irish term. And she's a strong woman, and she just kicked him out. She said, and barred him from the shop. Just before we go, I want to ask you about commercial radio, FM, particularly FM radio. AM is still going around the world, particularly in Australia for the shock jocks, for all the old people.
Similar in Canada, Henry. AM is talk here. Yeah, FM is music.
Is commercial radio on the way out? Given that we've got DAB and, well, I think that's digital radio. We don't really have that in Australia, strangely enough, but it's huge in Britain.
And not in Canada. We have something in North America called Sirius.
That's huge.
That's huge. That's really popular. Yeah. And that's an example of where I think commercial radio is going. Sirius is huge, and a lot of
people. What's the name of that dude? What's the name of that guy who keeps getting into trouble?
Howard Stern.
Howard. Yes. He's a big
name.
The
godfather of shock jock.
Yes, he started it all.
Well, he's now talking about running for president.
Brilliant!
Fun.
I love it.
all his interviews with Donald Trump. But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's evolving. I don't think commercial radio is dead at all. I think it's evolving.
Yeah,
and I think stations.
But will people listen to 3 minutes of advertising? I don't think the Y Gen or the millennials are up to that when they can listen to streaming music online with
they
no
can listen
talking
to stream music, and they can listen to Sirius. I think though, the one thing that radio does have is one intimacy in terms of somebody talking to you about music and you finding that interesting as opposed to just streaming it. Mm. I think there's still a market for that. I think there's also still the local bit, you know, people wanting to hear a station within the city and people talking about the gigs coming up in the city. And I think there's still
the
is a
traffic,
market for that.
The traffic of the driving
traffic,
home, the weather,
you know, the gossip and you know, who's coming to, you know, people who were celebrities spotted in bars and that kind of thing. Mm. So I think, you know, there's still a market for that. I think the stations that I see starting to get this right. I mean, I've got to name check Kevin Brannigan again, and he doesn't mind. He should listen. I'll have to tell him to listen to this.
But, I wish he'd broadcast our show, damn it. He can do it in the middle of the night if he wants. In fact, I'm going to send him this interview.
I'll leave that to you.
I am going to send Kevin Brannigan. He's going to listen to this interview, and I'm asking him on air to broadcast our 2-hour weekly chat show. I don't care if he does it at 3 a.m. It's out there.
But he does. He does spin-off. What is it? Spin-off. They've got sister digital stations that play kind of continuous music. The other thing, Kevin and a few others are really good at is using social media, and using that channel to make their stations relevant. And I think Niels Mahoney, an old Brian McCall, another old friend of ours who runs that brilliant business on air coaching, is kind of heavy into this. You know, how you create a brand, how you create a brand across multimedia. I mean, the product is still essentially radio, but you're using certain multimedia to now distribute that product. And I think people like Kevin do that really, really well. And I think that's the future of radio. I've read probably, Henry, for the last 10 years, people on Facebook screaming at me, telling me FM radio is dead. Well, it sure as hell isn't dead in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
It isn't dead in Dublin.
Isn't dead anywhere. I mean, but Ronan, I'm one of these people who keeps screaming, saying, is FM going to die? Because it really intrigues me, because there's so much streaming and people don't have to listen to ads. I mean, I think what you talked about, you know, FM radio or AM or whatever, having to evolve. And part of that my phone is talking to me. A part of that is actually, you know, not putting 3 minutes of ads on.
I think you're noticing with radio, even, you know, FM radio, there's a lot of show sponsorship, you know, happening now, and that might be part of that shift, as opposed to sort of traditional ad breaks. It's going to be much more sort of sponsored shows and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And that wasn't happening when we were in the 80s in Ireland. It's absolutely happening.
It's a
now
smart way
stage
of doing it, though, isn't it? I mean, I don't
it's
mind.
It's a very smart
that
way of doing it.
That
it's
doesn't
a very smart way of doing it. It's a very smart way of doing it. So I think it's going to evolve. Yes, I do think there is a market for, I'm not sure about DAB. It never took off in Canada. I don't think it really took off.
It hasn't in Australia either.
No, I think internet radio and using phones and phablets, absolutely, it's just another medium.
And why buy a digital radio? You know, it's another thing to buy.
Alexa. I've got an Alexa.
Yeah, that's right.
Here,
yes,
right? And that's why I listen to Radio Nova in Dublin. That's why I listen to Radio Nova. Well, I listen to Radio Nova in Dublin.
Is that right?
All through Alexa.
And is the sound quality good on that?
Sound quality is amazing, and that's the great thing. So I think it's evolving. I think it's a product that now goes through different media and channels. But good old FM, I don't see its demise. Certainly not in Ireland, certainly not in Australia, and certainly not in Canada for a very long time. And it may happen, and it may happen slowly. I think Norway was Henry a station that experimented with turning off FM transmitters. I'm not sure if they had to turn them back on again. I don't. That's not the world of Canada, and it's not the world of Ireland yet. And I do think it is that AM is probably, I think in Ireland it's interesting that they turned off, RTE turned off its AM transmitters. They have one on long wave, the old Atlantic 252 frequency, where they bought that transmitter. In Canada, though, AM is still pretty vibrant. It's, as I say, it's got like talk radio stations
The other thing to note is that AM radio signals can go through mountains. FM cannot.
Correct. And in a country like Canada, that's pretty handy because we've got lots of mountains, particularly, you know, stations in Alberta, stations in British Columbia, where AM is still really important because of that issue of mountains. It's not an issue in Manitoba. I mean, there's nothing to get in the way of an FM transmitter here. But I do think it'll evolve into multimedia. I think some people object to I think we'd probably have to call out our old friends 2FM in Ireland, most guilty parties.
Yes.
But you know, they've specialised in hiring social media influencers. They've hired Nikki Byrne, who was a singer in Westlife, to do a daily morning show.
Really?
And,
what,
and
2FM? We're doing this?
2FM, he was there for a while. Comedians by the bucket load. And even most recently, former rugby international Donough O'Callaghan has joined the 2FM breakfast show. I was really kind of surprised to see an ex-rookie international.
Sometime.
But and I can see why people get irritated like this. I mean, at one point, 2FM in Ireland was a serious music station. If it's just hiring, you know, social media influencers and comedians, that does negate your kind of branding as a serious music. I mean, Kevin Brannigan, in contrast, is not hiring those people. He's hiring sort of serious disc jockeys.
Yes, and if you've just joined us, welcome to the Kevin Brannigan Show. now, on the national broadcaster, 2FM, which originally was called Radio 2 and was set up in 1979 to bring Ireland's youth some music, there was a breakfast show at some stage called the Strawberry Alarm Clock.
The story around that one actually started on a Dublin radio station called FM 104. And in fact, I think they still call their breakfast show the Strawberry Alarm Clock. But it started with Colm Hayes.
Yes, Colm Hayes.
Who is now working for Kevin Brannigan.
Is that right? Oh, there you go.
He's doing a breakfast show, a two-hander on Classic Hits. Colm is still a great DJ. But Colm and a comedian called Jim Nugent started doing the show called The Strawberry Alarm Clock, and it was huge. It was huge, number one in the ratings in Dublin. Anyway, RTE decided to poach Colm Hayes and Jim Nugent, which involved them being marched out, according to legend, of FM 104. I think there were even lawsuits flying around, but eventually they decided to recreate that show on 2FM. And for whatever reason,
Colm was on that show on 2FM.
He was, and for some reason, it just didn't seem to work as well. And they ended up splitting up. Jim Nugent ended up going back to FM 104, where he was teamed up with a DJ called Mark Noble, and they now known as Nobby and Jim Jim, doing the Strawberry Alarm Clock. Colm, you know, stayed with RT for a while, and then moved initially to working for Kevin Brannigan and Radio Nova, and then now Classic Hits. But 2FM, they've had so many different types of breakfast shows, but, you know, comedians. They had a number of comedians from a show called Telly Republic, which was a kind of a satirical show on Irish Life. They were doing a show. One of the presenters of that is now doing her own show. And as I said, they've gone back to, I think, another more comedians than Donough O'Callaghan, the ex-rugby international, doing breakfast. But
it must work if they keep doing it. You know.
Well, I think it contrasts with the other national station, the national commercial station, which is Today FM. And it went for actually more of a policy of having very, very kind of established DJs on it. I mean, Ian Dempsey is doing the breakfast.
He's been doing that for nearly 30 years. Well, you know, when we talk about these broadcasters, I've worked with them and they were from the original Radio Nova. And I'm quickly going to play a Nova jingle from the original Radio Nova.
The sound of Europe, Radio Nova.
Radio Nova. Music's just begun. Radio Nova, Europe's number one.
Radio Nova, the music's
Okay, Robin, we got it. We're so over time. Look, thank you so much for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
It's a pleasure as always, Henry. Take care.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Talking music to real people. It's our music guru, Adam Devlin, on Bondi Tunes International.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Canberra, Australia, and Wellington, New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney, and I'm joined by Adam Devlin, who is our Australian political correspondent, but he's also our music guru. Adam, welcome to the show, and can you please switch your hats?
Has switched? Hello.
Oh, good. Thank God for that. Now, this pick of the week, we haven't done it for so long.
It's been a while. I've missed it, but it's good to be back.
We're back. Now, Olivia Newton-John and Dolly Parton did a duet, and this is what your pick of the week is this week. Just explain how this came about, and I guess there's some sad elements about this, how they got together and what they sang and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Look, the song we're doing, and I'm normally I don't say what the song is until sort of towards the end of our blurb about this, but I'm going to name the song now because it's really important to do so. The song is Jolene, a Dolly Parton song that Dolly Parton wrote and released in 1973. And it's become a classic country song. It's the story, if you don't know the song, it's the story of a woman whose husband is being flirted with by a teller at the bank. And so she goes down and confronts this woman called Jolene and basically explains to her, look, you know, you're beautiful, I'm plain, I've got a husband, back off, leave my husband alone, because he's mine.
I just want to mention, you know, I play this on our Plus show and also our Lovers on the Air show every week here on Bondi Tunes. And, when I play this song, Jolene by Dolly Parton, I always say, who? I mean, Dolly Parton? Who's going to take Dolly Parton's man? He's not going to go with anyone else.
No. You've got all that energy and personality and spunk in that tiny little body and those huge breasts and all that money. Why would you look anywhere else?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anyway, Dolly wrote it in 1973 and released it. Just a little bit of history for you. Probably two of Dolly Parton's most famous songs would have to be Jolene and I Will Always Love You, which, of course, became a massive hit in the 90s for Whitney Houston.
Yes.
She wrote both songs on the same day.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Both songs have made her incredibly large fortune, each of them on their own, and together with all the rest of the songs she's done. Anyway, we won't go into Dolly's background. I just wanted to mention that, you know, that she wrote this in 1973 and she took it all over the charts, all over the world.
Yes, I remember. I was 11 years old.
Yeah, and it's just become an absolute standard, not only of Dolly Parton, but of country music across the board.
Isn't there Dolly Land in
She does own her own theme park in it is called Dollywood.
Dollywood, that's it, yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
And it's in Pigeon Forge in, I think it's Tennessee, and it's in the town, near the town where she grew up. Dirt poor. A two-room shack is where her and her parents and her eight other siblings lived. And
eight other siblings.
There were nine of them in the family. Yes.
Wow. that's very Irish.
Yeah. And you know, dirt floor in the cottage. There was no electricity, no running water. And this is where she grew up. She grew up. Their entertainment in the evenings at the end of the day was to her father would play the guitar or the banjo, and they would all sing along and sing songs. And in Dollywood, her theme park, there's actually an exact replica of the cottage that she grew up in, which I haven't been able to find confirmation of this, but some people say that it is the actual cottage that was pulled down from their original site and brought to the theme park. She hasn't confirmed that, but she also hasn't denied it.
Adam, I know you've been to the United States more than once. I'm surprised that you haven't gone to her, I guess, Dollywood.
Yeah. Look, I haven't been there yet, but I can assure you, Henry, I will get there one day.
I'm sure you will. Yes.
Yeah. Now, as I said, in 1973, this song charted in Australia, Canada, Denmark, New Zealand, South Africa, Sweden, and, of course, in the US, it was on their Hot 100 chart, their Cashbox chart, the Adult Contemporary chart, and a country song chart, where it reached number one on the chart. So absolutely phenomenally successful. And it would have probably, it went three times platinum here in Australia, three times platinum in America, went platinum in Denmark and Norway, three times platinum in Sweden. Like, this song, it was just a phenomenon, a complete and utter phenomenon.
Yes.
Then in 1976, in what some people considered a quite a bizarre move, Olivia Newton-John, Australia's biggest selling recording artist of all time, recorded a copy of version of it for her album Come On Over in 1976.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, and everyone at the time was sort of going, it's an interesting sort of thing for her to do, but as an album track, that's fine. You know, it's paying homage to one of her heroes, Dolly Parton, so that's all good. Then she had the audacity to release it as a single in Australia and Japan.
Oh, really?
And so Olivia Newton-John released in 1976 her version of Jolene in both Japan and Australia and a few other markets.
How did she go?
It went top 10 in Japan and it went top 20 in Australia.
Was she friends with Dolly at the time?
Yes, she was.
Right.
Basically what had happened was in 1974, Olivia won several Country Music Association awards in America. And it created a chasm in the Country Music Association where half of the Country Music Association came out and said, Olivia Newton-John is not country. She's not American. She does not deserve to be awarded a Country Music Award. And they quit the Country Music Association and set up their own organization.
I love that.
Yeah. Now, a number of people came out and defended Olivia during that. And one of them was Dolly Parton.
Ah.
And Dolly defended her. She said she's a good woman. She's a great singer. You don't need to be born in Tennessee to be a country singer. You can be born anywhere and be a country singer. And so they became very close friends during 1974, 1975.
Right.
And they remained very close personal friends for the rest of Olivia's life.
Gosh.
But they never made it public. They never really, you never saw them out socializing together. You never saw them doing stuff together. There were a few photos over the years where they were at the same functions where they would be photographed together chatting. But their friendship was an incredibly private one between the two of them. And neither of them really publicized it. And I've got to applaud that, really.
Yes, indeed.
But so in 1976, Olivia, as I said, recorded Jolene and put it on her Come On Over album. Went top 10 in Japan, went top 20 here in Australia. And it became not inexplicably, because Olivia's version of it is stunningly good, very different to Dolly's, but very good. But it became a staple for Olivia over the years. And it became, there were a handful of songs that Olivia just had to sing every time she toured, because that's what people wanted. Yes. And her version of Jolene was absolutely one of those songs that was a permanent track listing in pretty much every concert she did from 1976 onwards. Mm. Now, over the years, there's been much talk of would Olivia Newton-John and Dolly Parton ever record together? And nothing ever happened of it. And so when it became fairly obvious that Olivia Newton-John was not going to recover from her third and last batch of breast cancer, a lot of her fans and a lot of Dolly fans started, almost sort of regretting the fact that these two wonderful, amazing singers never actually got to record together. Then a rumour came out about 6 or 8 months before Olivia died, that she had recorded a duet with Dolly Parton, and she was working on a new duets album. Now, a little more information came out as time went on, but nothing was really confirmed until just before Olivia's latest album was released. And on that, we saw the track listing, and it in fact included the song Jolene by Olivia Newton-John featuring Dolly Parton. Now, we had no confirmation as to what that meant until the album came out earlier this year. The album is called, it's Olivia Newton-John's second last new album. It's called Just the Two of Us, Volume 1. So there is a Volume 2 coming, and it's a collection of duets.
I'm just wondering. So she was with, she did these duets with many different singers, is that right?
Yes, right, absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
And it's a collection of duets that she had recorded in throughout her career that never got released. It's some duets that were released, that she recorded with other artists that were released on that other artist's album that never appeared on the Olivia Newton-John album. And it's some duets that that were recorded new specifically for this project.
Right.
So she went into the studio and she recorded with a number of people. And one of those people was Dolly Parton. And they decided to do a duet of both of their hits of Jolene.
Yes.
And so when you consider that they both had big hits with this song and then they come together to do it together, to me, knowing both artists as well as I do and knowing both versions of the song as well as I do, it to me, I was intrigued to see how they could do this and what it would sound like.
Yes.
And I just have to say that the output, the end result, blew my mind. It is 1,000 times better than I was expecting it ever could be. This was recorded 2 months before Olivia died.
Yes.
Just stop and think about that for a minute. You know, 8 weeks before she died, she recorded this song.
It is quite, I mean, I've seen the video and it's very, very powerful on so many levels. Of course, Olivia Newton-John was sitting down. And Dolly was standing, and that's a poignant thing, I guess.
Yes, Olivia wasn't able to stand at this point. And if you look at her face when she talks to the camera on the video and when she looks at the camera, you can tell that she's in pain. You can tell that she is suffering. But what you can't tell is any of that in her voice.
Yes.
It's all over her face. It's over her body. You can tell that she's not well looking at her. But when you just listen to the song, she sounds as good as she sounded 30 years ago.
And, you know, it must have been quite difficult for her to sound as good as she did 30 years ago. And I would say to our listeners, just look her up. Just put Olivia Newton-John and Dolly Parton, excuse me, and Jolene, and you'll see what Adam is talking about. But, yeah, 8 weeks before she died. Gosh.
Yeah. And I mean, I still, this song, I mean, my love of Olivia Newton-John is not new to anyone who's spent any more than about 30 seconds with me. and so I still tear up when I hear this song, knowing that it was the very last thing that Olivia recorded. And I think it is so special. Whilst there's a part of me that says I would love for her final recording to be a solo piece, just Olivia. I actually, over the months since it was released, I've come to appreciate this duet for exactly what it is, and that is Olivia saying to the world, I know I'm on my way out, I know I'm passing. I've got an opportunity to record some stuff that I want to record, the way I want to record it, without any pressure from anyone. It's time for me to be true and honest to myself about what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And the result of that was this song.
Okay. Do you want to,
that brings me, like, I'm tearing up now even talking about it.
You can cry on this show. I don't mind.
So, you know, this is an incredibly important recording to me. And I think anyone who listens to it will fall in love with it.
Okay. Do you want to present this for us, Adam?
Sure. This is a special song to me. Not only is it a perfectly written country song that has crossed over into the pop charts and proved to be a perfect pop song as well, but it's taking two artists who have both had huge success with this song, and they've re-recorded it together, each bringing their own unique style to the song. It adds something to the song that each individual version is missing. It adds an emotional level to it, a gravité, if you will. And both Dolly and Olivia in this sound amazing. They harmonize so brilliantly together. And what I love about this is their phrasing. You know, when they get to the chorus and they sing the line, Jolene, 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 they don't sing it together. They sing it slightly off key.
Yes, I noticed that, yeah.
So you get this back and forth between them. And it just brings nothing but pure joy to my heart. So I now want to present this song to you. Here is Olivia Newton-John featuring Dolly Parton. This is off Olivia Newton-John's new album, Just the Two of Us, the Duets Collection, Volume 1. It's out now everywhere. Do yourself a favour, grab a copy of that. This song, their version of Jolene, is on it. It is the finest song on this album. It is one of the finest recordings that both of these women have ever done. And what a treat it is to hear them together doing this song. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Olivia Newton-John and Dolly Parton with Jolene.
Well, hey, this is Dolly, in case you didn't recognize me. And I am so excited to be working with Olivia Newton-John, one of my favorites of all time. We've kind of always stayed close through the years. And I am just so proud to be a part of this duet project that she's doing. We're singing one of my all-time favorites that I've written called Jolene, and she says it's one of her favorites. So why not just do a duet on our favorite?
I'm excited. I've always wanted to sing with Dolly.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please, don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep, there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. But I can easily understand how you could easily take my man. You don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please, don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because. Have your choice of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. Oh, Jolene, I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you, and whatever you decide you'll do, Jolene, Jolene,
Jolene, Jolene, Jolene, Jolene, Jolene, Jolene. I'm begging of you, please, don't take my man.
Jolene, 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 Jolene
sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.